The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
All right. I love our intro music at the top of each hour. Everything's good. It was a little Sugar Ray and Someday there. Or no, every morning, whatever. I get blurry on my Sugar Ray. And the other one is we alternate with is some Calvin Harris thing. It all works for the opening of the program. But you know, sometimes you just need something meatier. Sometimes you need a little storm trooping. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is one of those times because, hey, the show just got better. Ted Nugent's in the house. Morning, doctor.
Good morning. Boy, you got some protein, some ballistic coefficient, some velocity, some serious trajectory with that music. God bless you, Davis. By the way, you're not the only guy that celebrates, you know, more meaty soundtracks in their lives. I think people still celebrate that stuff every day. I know damn well I do.
Indeed. And that's why it's always cool to visit. Listen, let's go to an event that you're a part of tomorrow, and then we'll go broadly and look at things from the 30,000-foot level, do some God, some guns, some rock and roll. Texas GOP, big event, and it's just down the road from here at Glenn Beck's house, that big Mercury studio thing. There's you, there's Alan West, there's our buddy David Barton at Wall Builders. Big event, and I guess they called you, and you said, hey, I'm in. So what do you envision?
Well, you know, I work a lot with people going through rehab, and I mean that seriously. I mean, I really work with a bunch of charities. We have a great charity called FullCircleProgram.com, where young people stumble and young people reach out and help each other. People should visit that, FullCircleProgram.com. But also, there's another rehab organization that's in need of some serious rehab, and it's the Texas GOP. Mark Davis, my Texas blood brother for God, family, country, freedom, law, and order. What is going on? So they don't remember the Alamo. They don't know how to fortify their constitutional oath by actually stopping policies that violate that constitutional oath. So I am honored beyond description. And, of course, I never run out of descriptions, but this time I do, because we have a treasure, a national constitutional warrior treasure in Colonel Alan West. Alan West is at the tip of the spear of keeping Texas, Texas, and stopping this encroachment, this attack on the traditional values that make America, and especially Texas, the place to go, a desirable location for a quality of life upgrade. So Uncle Ted's going to bring his Gibson Birdland and a loud amplifier, and I promise you this, I'm not going to make any friends tomorrow night.
Well, what? You'll keep the friends you have. It'll be awesome.
Well, there may be a few that get it. Certainly Colonel Alan West, and I think David Barton, too. Yes. And, you know, again, only the guilty need to feel guilty. If I identify people invading our borders that are rapists and murderers, if you're not a rapist and murderer, we're not talking about you. Ring any bells? My point is that I'm coming in with the truth, logic, common sense, constitutional, we the people crowbar, and I'm going to smack some skulls because the Texas GOP is not doing a good job. This is not the Texas I thought I moved to. So let me put it in simplest terms for anybody out there that are veering off the left lane instead of passing people in it. What other kind of carry is there than constitutional carry? Is there another form of keeping and bear arms than the constitutional one? And we finally, after 21 other states admitted that we have the right to keep and bear arms without paperwork. Finally, Texas woke up. So I'm really let down. I thought when I moved from the suburb of San Francisco, known as my beloved birth state of Michigan, that I was coming into a constitutional, we the people, freedom, remember the Alamo, God-given individual rights that are respected, an oath to the Constitution that are adhered to and revered. And I got to tell you, Mark, I'm really, really let down.
The event that Ted describes, featuring him and the Gibson Birdland and David Martin and Alan West, is tomorrow at the Mercury One Studios. And I've just put a link up on Twitter for it. I'll offer the asterisk. It's a fundraiser. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But if you got some cash lying around at various levels, it'll be a room you will want to be in. So what have you been up to lately? What kind of rooms and environments and outdoor environs have you been in? What is the Ted Nugent springtime look like?
Well, I'm a spoiled brat. I choose my own path every day, and I've been doing it since I was about 11. So it may seem redundant and overbearing to some people, which I've made a career out of redundancy and overbearingness. Have you noticed that?
I have.
Don't think I'm not enjoying myself, Mark. But anyhow, I get up and snuggle with my dogs in this beautiful Queen of the Forest, Maine. And we have a big slug of Joe here and sit on the veranda and look out at our Texas Serengeti. And I shoot my bow and arrow and I do media. And I drive home truth, logic, and common sense across the globe in various forms of media, bringing an instinctual, natural, self-evident truth-based pulse of hardworking Americans and why people want to be hardworking Americans, or at least Americans, and maybe they can get away without being hardworking. So I'm a hellraiser. I'm a we the people participant. And I shoot my Matthews bow and I escape that insanity and I become one with the mystical flight of the arrow. I communicate with my band, Greg and Jason, every day. I'm creating music, my Birdland. It's snarling. In fact, my Birdlands, once again, last time we talked, I think they were in the breeding mode, and I can't seem to stop them. It's a beautiful noise factor. So I still hunt and fish and trap and raise hell and demand constitutional accountability from my elected employees. By the way, Mark, I'm excited and honored to do the GOP thing for this great Alan West tomorrow night in Dallas. But I'm involved in all 50 states. I'm involved in Canada. Hell, I got bow hunting legalized in France. So awesome. I really did. I mean, so I'm a global hellraiser.
Bow hunting in France. It's been made safe for bow hunting in France. Is the landscape here in America, are we slowly crawling toward the normalcy we all crave, sufficient that there might be some tour dates that we might see soon?
You know, we are crawling at an embarrassing pace, shackled by the hoax. I finally used that word. I've never used that word till just now. But there is a Fauci, CDC, FDA, WHO hoax going on in the overbearing, unnecessary, punitive, capricious, arbitrary overreaction to the Chinese virus. So mom and pop businesses are being hurt, including mom and pop rock and roll businesses. I mean, what is it, Mark? Millions of people, many millions of American workers are out of work because these tours are canceled. You have no idea. Well, you do have an idea how heartbroken we are that we're not playing at Billy Bob's, because there's so many jurisdictions where you can't do concerts, and then the other jurisdictions have a limited capacity. Do you think my truck drivers are going to take a 50% pay cut?
No.
Do you think the bus driver, you think the bus company is going to give me a break because we can only sell 50% of the tickets? So these are really heartbreaking times for music lovers everywhere. But Jason and Greg and I, oh, by the way, we are unleashing the Ted Nugent musical beast at Tucker Hall once again, Saturday the 22nd. I got to get that in there because John Kutz and Johnny Big on bass and Calvin Ross from Lone Star Music. I'm telling you, Mark, it goes back to the foundational rhythm and blues experimental Chuck Berry overload. Tucker Hall, Saturday night, the 22nd, in Waco. Yeah, yep. we're gonna defy the rules, which I really enjoy doing, which makes the music that much more fun, by the way. So we're going to jam. We're going to unleash a Ted Nugent greasy speakeasy at Tucker Hall and just have a rock out beyond belief.
The greasy speakeasy. It's funny. There is a value in an intimate venue. I don't know what the capacity is on Tucker Hall. Billy Bob's is a huge honky-tonk. And obviously, you know, the first time you and I were in the same room together, it was the Capitol Center in Largo, Maryland, 1976. You opened for Black Sabbath. And you didn't, and you didn't know me yet. And I didn't know you, y'all. Oh, I knew you. What is the difference between the joys of 18,000 people, that's great, versus the small hall, the intimate setting? Does the show change?
You know, if you play back the tape of this wonderful interview between Ted Nugent and Mark Davis, you'll hear me say I'm a spoiled brat because my music has such a life of its own. I've been surrounded. You always hear me rave about my fellow musicians. I mean, I've had the greatest, most dedicated, gifted musicians at my side literally since the early 1960s back in Detroit. Just gifted virtuosos, Mark. You know that. And even though I didn't see you out there because I was looking at the girls myself, but I knew that you were in Largo that night because there's a velocity, there's a fire, there's a passion for killer soulful music that my band and I create. So when we get up there, I don't care if it's a 500,000 people at Cal Jam or 250 people that sneak into Tucker Hall for the Ted Nugent Greasy Speakeasy in 2021, it's me and my guys. I'm almost oblivious. Now, obviously, I'm a tuned-in guy. Situational awareness really enhances musical delivery between the band and the audience. So there is a magnification when you get tens of thousands of people. But quite honestly, my music with my guys is so powerful, so intoxicating for us. We are so we are samurai oneness with the music that we are unleashing nanosecond by nanosecond. So even though I love the audience and I respect and I want to deliver for the hard-paying audience, we are so selfish up there because we're testing ourselves. You understand? It doesn't matter whether we're in the basement getting ready to record a song. There's a firestorm of musical cravings that my band and I just, we literally wallow in it. So it doesn't matter if there's 100 people or 100,000 people. We're going to unleash the beast every song, every night, every concert. What a lucky, lucky level of passion that is. Huh?
How do you, and loyalty has been a byword of the people who have been in your touring band over the years, when it comes time, maybe there's a turnover at drummer, turnover at bass. How do you audition a new band member?
Well, again, I'm a spoiled brat. These guys come to me. When Tommy Clefetos, who became the drummer for Ozzy and Black Sabbath and Rob Zombie, I mean, really one of the most desirable drummers in the world. He literally was a 19-year-old kid in Detroit. And the great Alto Reed from Bob Seger's band, God rest his soul, what another gifted Detroit musician. When he was doing a soundtrack for Jeff, what's my Michigan buddy's name? The actor Jeff, I can't think of his last name. Dumb and Dumber. What's his name?
Jeff Daniels.
Yeah, Jeff Daniels. Jeff Daniels. But my brother's name is Jeff, and I'm looking at two guys I got to call to name Jeff and Jeffrey. Anyhow, Jeff Daniels was putting a soundtrack together for Escanaba in the Moonlight, a story about some goofy deer hunters up in the UP. And who are you going to call for a soundtrack for a couple of goofy deer hunters up in the UP other than Ted Nugent? So they wanted me to write some songs, and Alto goes, I saw this drummer last week named Tommy Clefetos. So Tommy jammed on that song, and I went, holy smoke, this kid is a monster. So I was getting ready to go on the road. I said, would you go on the road with me? Because I'm spontaneous and I'm a spoiled brat. When I see a guy that just goes above and beyond the passion and the dexterity and the rhythmical application of my guitar openings, I just got to have it. So same thing with Greg Smith and with Marco Mendoza and Michael Lutz and Rob Grange. I mean, again, my musical list of unbelievable musicians is literally the top 1% that ever walked the earth. And that's why people love my music, because of the dedication of my fellow musicians, and I give them all the credit.
I wanted to wrap up with a story about songwriting, because you've written so much of what you've done. And I wanted to, there has to be some moment at which something went bing in your head and you wrote it. You had to work it out on the guitar and knock out some quality lyrics for the iconic love song that is Cat Scratch. 76 is when it became front of mind for America and the world. Do you remember where you were when you thought, hey, here's something I can do?
Pittsburgh. I was in Pittsburgh, I swear to God.
Why, of course.
We have these, we are on the road all the time. And, mm-hmm. and you can tell, even though I'm an old man, I'm 72, but I'm like a horny teenager in the garage with my first amplifier and a bunch of cheerleaders dancing like idiots. Mrs. Nugent qualifies in 2021, I promise you. And so do I. So my point is that musical fire that I experienced when I first heard Little Richard and Chuck Berry, Mark, it's alive. It's more powerful now than it was then, because back then there were obstacles in that I was stumbling to replicate Chuck Berry's licks. I couldn't get my hands to go there adequately, but now I can. So now my passions and the stimuli factor of my musical influences are more applicable and more easily manifested, because I can actually play those licks now. So now I go beyond those licks and create my own. The point is, Cat Scratch up in the dressing room, every time, every gig, every day, Mark, this morning, I played licks that I'm going, oh, this is so cool. So I still, and Cat Scratch, that's actually a variation of the original guitar song, Honky Tonk. It's in the foundation of every Chuck Berry, every killer rock and roll song, every Aerosmith, every Van Halen, every ZZ Top. Honky Tonk is there somewhere. But instead of just the simple traditional way, which I've always been known to throw grenades in simple traditional things, and I pull the pin. And instead of just the ga dang ga dang ga ding, like satisfaction, ga 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 ga, that's honky tonk. Let's spend the night together. Dun, 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 dun. That's honky tonk. Well, I just unleashed with the Gibson Birdland, because it makes so much noise and it's always wanting to feed back, which makes a sonic tapestry that a regular guitar won't allow. I just turned it into chords and said, dun, 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 dun. I went, because Mark, I'm from Detroit. Mark, I'm a soul brother. Mark, I worship at the altar of the Funk Brothers. So all my licks just have a wonderful groove, if I haven't mentioned that lately. And Cat Scratch is the groove orgy of the original Honky Tonk lick, done with the way that I do it. And with a Birdland guitar, it's just noisier and bigger and grindier.
Somehow I knew the story would be magnificent. And so will the atmosphere tomorrow, Friday night at the, it's over at Glenn Beck's house at that wonderful Mercury Theater, the Mercury Studios location in Irving. And David Barton and Glenn is there, and Alan West is there, and Ted Nugent is there. What more do you need to know? It is a Republican Party of Texas fundraiser, and I just put the link for getting in there on my Twitter at Mark Davis. So have a huge time. I know you will. You will make it a huge time. And thanks, as always, for the wonderful time that we always have. I love you. I appreciate you. Best to you, Shemaine, and the family, and keep rocking.
Yeah, Mark, and thank you for digging into music, because I love talking about music. And all your listeners there at The Answer, they live a soundtrack. So thank you for spotlighting that soundtrack that we all love so much. I love the way you do that, man.
Thank you. Coming from anybody, that's nice. Coming from you, that's a little special. I appreciate it. I love you, man. That is Ted Nugent, at Ted Nugent on Twitter, tednugent.com, for all things Ted. It's 9:25. Great Dwayne Eddy and Honky Tonk rattling around the head of Ted Nugent for really not even 20 years, because this is 1958 and Cat Scratch probably wrote that in 75 or put it on an album in 76. All right. You always get the full plate with Ted, man. All right. righty, 9:32. Here's a full plate of news from Gordon Griffin, and then home stretch, things on your mind and mine. I got stuff I haven't played yet, stuff I haven't said yet, things that might not even have occurred to me yet. It's the Golden Home Stretch Half Hour. Come be a part of it. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 9:32. Here's Gordon. Out of Los Angeles, the great Richie Valens. This was a big record. Number two, in fact, in 1958 on the Billboard charts. And radio stations would get them, you know, like, in the mail. And sometimes. This happened with the Beatles a couple of times, where the song on the back would be just as good as the song on the front, and radio stations would start playing what they called the B-side. So on the B-side of Donna was La Bamba. All in, this is the very end of 1958. And just weeks later, in the winter of 1959 there, the day the music died, 17-year-old Richie Valens died in the plane crash with Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper. So little Richie Valens on what would have been his 80th birthday. Wow. Alrighty, highlights today. We started out. Make sure you always get the podcast. Always get the podcast. As soon as we finish at 10, the entire three-hour enterprise is laid out for you. As Rhonda puts the podcast up, usually before the hour of 10 o'clock is done. So usually by 11, you got today's entire show that you can go back and catch things you missed. If you missed the very, very beginning of today's program, we welcomed Congressman Chip Roy. And we talked about whether he is interested in being Liz Cheney's successor. And the short answer was maybe. He made all these points that were, shall we say, respectfully critical of Elise Stefanik, the New York Republican congresswoman who appears to just be handpicked to be Liz Cheney's successor. I told you this day before yesterday. It's like, I thought there might have been 10 people, just to pick a number, you know, who might have said, hey, I'm up for this. Let's have a big old scrum and, you know, may the best man or woman win. But no, it was like it just had to be Elise Stefanik, and I got nothing against her. But, no competition? Well, Chip Roy sounds like he wants to provide that competition. And good luck with that, and I think he kind of knows that. The Trump endorsement soon followed because Elise was just all about a full-throated support and defense of Trump during impeachment. Some people have been interested in going back and looking at Elise Stefanik's voting record. Oh, can't have that. And they find in there some votes that might not be the most conservative knife in the drawer. Huh, okay. So did Trump make her better? He certainly did a lot of other people. Is she the best choice to succeed Liz Cheney in the number three position in the Republican Party in the House? You know, number one is Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. Number two is the House Minority Whip Steve Scalise of Louisiana. Love those guys. Who needs to be number three now that the Liz Cheney vacancy is there? And it's probably going to be Elise Stefanik, and I expect we'll be well served by that. But Chip Roy told us this morning, you know, maybe folks need an alternative that they can vote for. And he explained in our segment why he thinks he may just well, I mean, even by the end of today, throw his hat in the ring for that. So we'll see if that's the case. Go listen to that on the podcast. I also shared at the beginning of the 8 o'clock hour my townhall.com column, the top 10 lies about the fall of Liz Cheney. The occasion of her exit from House leadership has been met with some of the biggest waves of garbage analysis. And it's all predictable because it comes from a leftist media culture that hates Trump. And so she hates Trump. And so it's going to be tilted through that lens. Oh, they had to get rid of her for speaking the truth. She needed to go because she couldn't keep her foul mouth from dogging Trump every day in the midst of a party that is interested in seeing how his legacy might be energized and mobilized and maintained in a way that brings us victories in 2022 and 2024, whether they actually contain him in person or not. And as I explained in that column, if you gather me 100 Trump supporters, people who simply say they are Trump supporters, they liked his presidency, there's a full spectrum there. There are people who are just on their knees praying that he himself runs again in 2024. Then there are folks who'd be okay with that, but they'd also be okay with maybe a Ron DeSantis, maybe some other rightful heir to his revolution. And then there are other types of people who are thoroughly appreciative of the Trump presidency, but who, all other things being equal, think it's kind of time to move on to somebody, you know, who's not 78 and who might take us on, you know, somewhat of a little less of a white knuckle ride on the way toward the goals that he thankfully brought us. So there are lots of ways to be, you know, a quote unquote Trump supporter. What do all three of those groups have in common? They have zero use for people with an enormous chip on their shoulder, some bug up their butt, some gripe, some grudge, and, you know, and trolling that out every day. That's what Liz Cheney chose to do. And that's why she is not in a position of leadership anymore. Ta-da! It's just that simple. Now, so much of the analysis, and I use the word loosely, about Liz Cheney is designed to lift her up as a truth teller against you if you feel that the truth that matters to you. Now, you'll never hear me say your truth. There is no your truth. There's no my truth. There's only the truth. Now, not everything subjects itself to a factual binary true or not true test, but here's a paragraph that will resonate, I believe, with many of you. You know that courts were not able to see or rule on some demonstrable number of votes that handed Arizona or Michigan or Pennsylvania to Trump. That did not happen. But does that mean we know the election was clean and fair and proper? I would suggest not. We know that all kinds of rules were violated. We know that all kinds of norms were sidelined on the flimsy altar of COVID urgency. And for that reason, you harbor doubt about the validity of the 2020 result. I just described millions and millions of people. Liz Cheney thinks you are stupid. Liz Cheney and the impeachment treehouse of Republicans, Adam Kinzinger and the rest of that rogues gallery, think that they're just smarter than you are. They also think you hate the Constitution, that you are a fomenter of discord. You might as well have been a rioter on January 6th. And, of course, every Democrat loves Liz Cheney because she hates Trump. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. So what of the millions of us who harbor principled, fact-based doubts and skepticism about the 2020 result? Well, I played a little bit of this. Here's a little bit more. The wonderful Molly Hemingway, who has written Rigged, How the Media, Big Tech, and Democrats Seized Our Election.
You need to not have rules of voting that make it impossible to detect fraud. This is why people care so much about how the rules are set going in. It was, you know, we saw this throughout the campaign. You know, they would send out ballots in some states where people were getting, you know, six or more ballots sent to their house. They're also being told that this is an existential threat, whether they can, you know, whether they can get rid of Donald Trump or not, and creating permission structures for doing things that are quite radical. It's a very complex, complex approach, but it's absolutely important.
It is important. I can't wait to read your book, and I will. Molly Hemingway.
I thought there was more. Well, actually, that works out well. Tucker just floored by her brilliance. And I said during this entire enterprise that somebody needs, not just in some big, long article in some conservative publication, that would have been lovely, but in actual book form to do the deep dive into what exactly happened, as best we know. And that's what's foggy, because there's not going to be any, you know, fairies that drop from the sky and say, here are the exact numbers of how many improper votes were tallied in Arizona, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania. Here are the exact, people go, where's the data? Why didn't the courts rule, you know, factually that this state or that state was improperly awarded to Biden? It's because judges have a certain factual bar that they must meet. And in the various state challenges It was about going in there and saying this particular state or that particular state messed up. They awarded their electoral votes to the wrong guy. And I told you at the time that was never, ever going to be provable. And some of you got testy, saying, oh, you're an insufficient warrior. I said, well, part of being a warrior is knowing what fights where success is possible and knowing where you're spinning your wheels and wasting your time. Said all along that the constitutional arguments are best, going state by state and showing the way that procedures were changed, that laws were changed on the fly, that state legislatures did not change them, which is the only way you can change election law. Local election officials can't do it. You know, governors can't do it. And take those flaws in the way election laws were protected, or not protected, as the case may be, take those to the Supreme Court. That's where the argument is best made. And the Supreme Court punted. Supreme Court said, nah, we're good. Therein lies the problem, leaving us in the untenable, unacceptable situation of having doubts about the 2020 election that will never be resolved. We should never be put through that situation again. It's 9:51. That's a good tonic for these days. Don't you worry about a thing. The great Stevie Wonder. To take us out from Inner Visions 1973. For producer Rhonda K. Moreland on Twitter at producer Rhonda K. R-O-N-D-A capital K on the tweeter. Don't you worry about it. Thanks to Mr. Matt for technical guru skills. Gordon Griffin for news ace extraordinaire service top and bottom of each hour. I'm Mark Davis. God bless our troops, our country, our families. Have a great, great day. Holy cow, tomorrow's Friday. What are we going to do about that? Join us. We'll find out at 7 on 6:60 a.m. The Answer. Mike Gallagher's next. Have a fantastic day. The sun's coming out. Woohoo!